Chapter 58. A riddle without an answer. Again, Mr. Mortimer Lightwood and Mr. Eugene Rayburn sat together in the temple. This evening, however, they were not together in the place of business of the eminent solicitor, but in another dismal set of chambers facing it on the same second floor, on whose dungeon-like black outer door appeared the legend: Private, Mr. Eugene Rayburn, Mr. Mortimer Lightwood, Mr. Lightwood's office is opposite. Appearances indicated that this establishment was a very recent institution. The white letters of the inscription were extremely white and extremely strong to the sense of smell. The complexion of the tables and chairs was like Lady Tippin's, a little too blooming to be believed in, and the carpets and floor cloth seemed to rush at the beholder's face in the unusual prominency of their patterns. But the temple, accustomed to tone down both the still life and the human life that has much to do with it, would soon get the better of all that. Well, ... said Eugene, on one side of the fire, I feel tolerably comfortable. I hope the upholsterer may do the same. ... Why shouldn't he? ... asked Lightwood, from the other side of the fire. To be sure, ... pursued Eugene, reflecting, he is not in the secret of our pecuniary affairs, so perhaps he may be in an easy frame of mind. ... We shall pay him, ... said Mortimer. Shall we, really? ... returned Eugene, indolently surprised. You don't say so. ... I mean to pay him, Eugene, for my part, said Mortimer, in a slightly injured tone. Ah! I mean to pay him to, retorted Eugene. But then I mean, so much that I don't mean. Don't mean? So much, that I only mean, and shall always only mean and nothing more, my dear Mortimer. It's the same thing. His friend, lying back in his easy chair, watched him lying back in his easy chair, as he stretched out his legs on the hearth rug, and said, with the amused look that Eugene Rayburn could always awaken in him without seeming to try or care, anyhow, your vagaries have increased the bill. Calls the domestic virtues vagaries. Exclaimed Eugene, raising his eyes to the ceiling. This very complete little kitchen of ours, said Mortimer, in which nothing will ever be cooked, my dear, dear Mortimer, returned his friend, lazily lifting his head a little to look at him, how often have I pointed out to you that its moral influence is the important thing? Its moral influence on this fellow. Exclaimed Lightwood, laughing. Do me the favor, said Eugene, getting out of his chair with much gravity, to come and inspect that feature of our establishment which you rashly disparage. With that, taking up a candle, he conducted his chum into the fourth room of the set of chambers, a little narrow room which was very completely and neatly fitted as a kitchen. See, said Eugene, miniature flour barrel, rolling pin, spice box, shelf of brown jars, chopping board, coffee mill, dresser elegantly furnished with crockery, saucepans and pans, roasting jack, a charming kettle, an armory of dish covers. The moral influence of these objects, informing the domestic virtues, may have an immense influence upon me, not upon you, for you are a hopeless case, but upon me. In fact, I have an idea that I feel the domestic virtues already forming. Do me the favor to step into my bedroom. Secretor, you see, an abstruse set of solid mahogany pigeon holes, one for every letter of the alphabet. To what use do I devote them? I receive a bill, say, from Jones. I docket it neatly at the secretor, Jones, and I put it into pigeonhole J. It's the next thing to a receipt, and is quite as satisfactory to me. And I very much wish, Mortimer, sitting on his bed, with the air of a philosopher lecturing a disciple, that my example might induce you to cultivate habits of punctuality and method, and, by means of the moral influences with which I have surrounded you, to encourage the formation of the domestic virtues. Apostrophe, Mortimer laughed again, with his usual commentaries of how can you be so ridiculous, Eugene. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and what an absurd fellow you are. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but when his laugh was out, there was something serious, if not anxious, in his face. Despite that pernicious assumption of lassitude and indifference, which had become his second nature, he was strongly attached to his friend. He had founded himself upon Eugene, when they were yet boys at school, and at this hour, imitated him no less, admired him no less, loved him no less, than in those departed days. Eugene, apostrophe, said he, if I could find you in earnest for a minute, I would try to say an earnest word to you. Apostrophe, an earnest word? Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Eugene. The moral influences are beginning to work. Say on. Apostrophe, well, I will, apostrophe, return the other, though you are not earnest yet. Apostrophe, in this desire for earnestness, apostrophe, murmured Eugene, with the air of one who was meditating deeply, I trace the happy influences of the little flour barrel and the coffee mill. Gratifying. Apostrophe, Eugene, apostrophe, resumed Mortimer, disregarding the light interruption, and laying a hand upon Eugene's shoulder, as he, Mortimer, stood before him seated on his bed, you are withholding something from me. Apostrophe, Eugene looked at him, but said nothing. All this past summer, you have been withholding something from me. Before we entered on our boating vacation, you were as bent upon it as I have seen you upon anything since we first rode together. But you cared very little for it when it came, often found it a tie and a drag upon you, and were constantly away. Now it was well enough half a dozen times, 20 times, to say to me in your own odd manner, which I know so well, and like so much, that your disappearances were precautions against our boring one another. But of course after a short while I began to know that they covered something. I don't ask what it is, as you have not told me, but the fact is so. Say, is it not? Apostrophe, I give you my word of honor, Mortimer, apostrophe, returned Eugene, after a serious pause of a few moments, that I don't know. Apostrophe, don't know, Eugene? Apostrophe, apostrophe, upon my soul, don't know. I know less about myself than about most people in the world, and I don't know. Apostrophe, you have some design in your mind? Apostrophe, apostrophe, have I? I don't think I have. Apostrophe, at any rate, you have some subject of interest there which used not to be there? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I really can't say, apostrophe, replied Eugene, shaking his head blankly, after pausing again to reconsider. At times I have thought yes, at other times I have thought no. Now, I have been inclined to pursue such a subject, now I have felt that it was absurd, and that it tired and embarrassed me. Absolutely, I can't say. Frankly and faithfully, I would if I could. Apostrophe, so replying, he clapped a hand, in his turn, on his friend's shoulder, as he rose from his seat upon the bed, and said, you must take your friend as he is. You know what I am, my dear Mortimer. You know how dreadfully susceptible I am to boredom. You know that when I became enough of a man to find myself an embodied conundrum, I bored myself to the last degree by trying to find out what I meant. You know that at length I gave it up and declined to guess any more. Then how can I possibly give you the answer that I have not discovered? The old nursery form runs, riddle me re, perhaps you can't tell me what this may be? My reply runs, no. Upon my life, I can't. Apostrophe, so much of what was fantastically true to his own knowledge of this utterly careless Eugene, mingled with the answer, that Mortimer could not receive it as a mere evasion. Besides, it was given with an engaging air of openness, and of special exemption of the one friend he valued, from his reckless indifference. Come, dear boy. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Eugene. Let us try the effect of smoking. If it enlightens me at all on this question, I will impart unreservedly. Apostrophe, they returned to the room they had come from, and, finding it heated, opened a window. Having lighted their cigars, they leaned out of this window, smoking, and looking down at the moonlight, as it shone into the court below. No enlightenment, apostrophe resumed Eugene, after certain minutes of silence. I feel sincerely apologetic, my dear Mortimer, but nothing comes. Apostrophe, if nothing comes, apostrophe returned Mortimer, nothing can come from it. So I shall hope that this may hold good throughout, and that there may be nothing on foot. Nothing injurious to you, Eugene, or apostrophe. Eugene stayed him for a moment with his hand on his arm, while he took a piece of earth from an old flower pot on the window sill, and dexterously shot it at a little point of light opposite. Having done which to his satisfaction, he said, or, apostrophe apostrophe, or injurious to anyone else. Apostrophe, how, apostrophe, said Eugene, taking another little piece of earth, and shooting it with great precision at the former mark, how injurious to anyone else? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't know. Apostrophe, and, apostrophe, said Eugene, taking, as he said the word, another shot, to whom else? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't know. Apostrophe, checking himself with another piece of earth in his hand, Eugene looked at his friend inquiringly, and a little suspiciously. There was no concealed or half-expressed meaning in his face. Two belated wanderers in the mazes of the law, apostrophe, said Eugene, attracted by the sound of footsteps, and glancing down as he spoke, stray into the court. They examine the doorposts of number one, seeking the name they want. Not finding it at number one, they come to number two. On the hat of wanderer number two, the shorter one, I drop this pellet. Hitting him on the hat, I smoke serenely, and become absorbed in contemplation of the sky. Apostrophe, both the wanderers looked up towards the window, but, after interchanging a mutter or two, soon applied themselves to the doorposts below. There they seemed to discover what they wanted, for they disappeared from view, by entering at the doorway. When they emerge, apostrophe, said Eugene, you shall see me bring them both down, and so prepared two pellets for the purpose. He had not reckoned on their seeking his name, or Lightwood's. But either the one or the other would seem to be in question, for now there came a knock at the door. I am on duty tonight, apostrophe, said Mortimer, stay you where you are, Eugene. Apostrophe, requiring no persuasion, he stayed there, smoking quietly, and not at all curious to know who knocked, until Mortimer spoke to him from within the room, and touched him. Then, drawing in his head, he found the visitors, to be young Charlie Hexam and the schoolmaster, both standing facing him, and both recognized at a glance. You recollect this young fellow, Eugene? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mortimer. Let me look at him, apostrophe, returned Rayburn, coolly. Oh, yes, yes. I recollect him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he had not been about to repeat that former action of taking him by the chin, but the boy had suspected him of it, and had thrown up his arm with an angry start. Laughingly, Rayburn looked to Lightwood for an explanation of this odd visit. He says he has something to say. Apostrophe, surely it must be to you, Mortimer. Apostrophe, so I thought, but he says no. He says it is to you. Apostrophe, yes, I do say so, apostrophe, interposed the boy. And I mean to say what I want to say to Mr. Eugene Rayburn. Apostrophe, apostrophe, passing him with his eyes, as if there were nothing where he stood, Eugene looked on to Bradley Headstone. With consummate indolence, he turned to Mortimer, inquiring, and who may this other person be? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am Charles Hexam's friend, apostrophe, said Bradley, I am Charles Hexam's schoolmaster. Apostrophe, my good sir, you should teach your pupils better manners, apostrophe, returned Eugene. Composedly smoking, he leaned an elbow on the chimney piece, at the side of the fire, and looked at the schoolmaster. It was a cruel look, in its cold disdain of him, as a creature of no worth. The schoolmaster looked at him, and that too, was a cruel look, though of a different kind, that it had a raging jealousy and fiery wrath in it. Very remarkably, neither Eugene Rayburn nor Bradley Headstone looked at all at the boy. Through the ensuing dialogue, those two, no matter who spoke, or whom was addressed, looked at each other. There was some secret, sure perception between them, which set them against one another in all ways. In some high respects, Mr. Eugene Rayburn, said Bradley, answering him with pale and quivering lips, the natural feelings of my pupils are stronger than my teaching. In most respects, I dare say, replied Eugene, enjoying his cigar, though whether high or low is of no importance. You have my name very correctly. Pray, what is yours? It cannot concern you much to know, but true, interposed Eugene, striking sharply and cutting him short at Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.